everybody. Welcome to Sweater Weather, a podcast about Canadian arts and culture. I'm Aaron Giovannone, a writer and professor.
And I'm Naomi Lewis, a writer and editor.
How are you doing, Naomi? This is what I normally ask at the top of the show.
Well, Aaron, I'm okay.
You're okay.
Yeah, I'm hanging in.
Yeah, hanging in there. We're both hanging in there. Yeah. How's Montreal life treating you? We're still in Montreal, of course.
Well, Montreal is still a wonderful city. I've had a little bit of bad luck. We've had a little bit of bad luck. I broke my fingers and partly cut one off in a door, so that was unfortunate.
That was some, yes.
Very unfortunate.
A very unfortunate incident.
And our other unfortunate incident was a power surge that destroyed the computer that we use for video editing.
That's right. Our video editing computer exploded. And so... I had to buy parts and build a new one, and so that's kind of that's been a challenge.
Yeah,
an expensive challenge.
A very expensive, very unfortunate challenge.
But look, life is good. Like life is very good.
It is.
We're in Montreal. We're having a good time.
I was also stung on the bottom of the foot by a bee.
Okay,
so, but
come
you know
on,
how bad
this...
luck comes in threes. So I figure.
You know what? It's almost as if maybe we're cursed by some sort of evil spirit, perhaps at the moment. I don't know. This is referring to the topic of our show. We'll be getting to in a minute.
Yes.
But before we get into that, we've been forgetting to like plug our Patreon at the top of the show. And we should make sure that we do that every episode.
Yes, we should.
Right. So if you like Sweater Weather, your donations, monthly support would be much appreciated. You can do that at patreon.com/Canadian Sweater. You can make a monthly donation to the show. It helps with the various unexpected expenses that we often have for the show.
Yeah, like a computer.
Like a computer. So we very much appreciate our patrons. Patreon support. Thanks. Today, the topic of our show is, are you afraid of the dark? Are you?
Yes. Are you?
I used to be quite afraid. Depends on the night, I guess. Mm-hmm. Depends how dark it is. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm just afraid of tripping and hurting myself again.
So Are You Afraid of the Dark was a horror thriller anthology series for kids that ran in Canada on YTV from 1990 to 2000. And it was in the US on the Nickelodeon network as well. So each week, the teenaged members of the Midnight Society gather around a campfire to tell spooky tales. The show then dramatizes these stories for the audience. And that's just how the show works. Now, here today to talk about Are You Afraid of the Dark with us is Tasnuva Hayden. She's a Canadian writer based in Calgary, where she works as a consulting engineer. And she's the editor for Filling Station Literary Magazine, which we know well. She's the author of the new poetry collection, Orchid Astronomy, from the University of Calgary Press. And importantly, she was a big Are You Afraid of the Dark fan. Thank you for joining us, Taz.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk about Are You Afraid of the Dark with you guys today.
And are you afraid of the dark, Taz?
No, I think when I was little, I loved all the spooky stuff. I used to think I was a witch, honestly.
So you identified with the demons and ghouls and stuff.
Friday nights was our kind of devil summoning nights. So
that's a great way not to be afraid, as if you actually see yourself as the scary force that might be lurking in the dark. Yeah.
Wow.
I love that.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
So Taz, it was your choice to talk about Are You Afraid of the Dark, which we were delighted to do. So you already mentioned that this was like a Friday night ritual for you. Is that right?
Well, so basically, I think when I watched Are You Afraid of the Dark, my family was still living in Norway.
I'm picturing Norwegian woods.
I mean, we definitely related to all of the scenes that were set in the woods. There's quite a few of them in Are You Afraid of the Dark? Friday nights was just basically when my friend and I would have our witches meeting. But the Are You Afraid of the Dark was broadcasted on Saturday evenings, I think. It would be on after the children's programming ended. So to us, that meant the show was kind of edgy, right? So I remember my friend and I were just obsessed with it. We'd watch it religiously every Saturday night. And I remember, like, we were so curious about where the show was made that we actually watched to the end of the credits, and we found out it was made in Canada. At that time, we didn't know anything about Canada other than Are You Afraid of the Dark was made there. So, and
so when you moved to Canada, when you found out you were moving to Canada.
Oh, yeah, I was like, I was so excited. I was like, oh, yeah, we're moving to the country where they made Are You Afraid of the Dark? I was like a very cool and civilized place.
Yeah, my friend and I, we really liked the storytelling frame around the campfire in the middle of the woods. It was really appealing to us as Norwegians, since we also spent a lot of time playing in the woods as well. And we were really taken with the fact that it was some kind of secret society meeting in the middle of the night. To us, it was like, this is pretty gutsy for kids to be doing, because they're supposed to be in bed sleeping. So yeah, in our minds, it was like these kids were sneaking out of their houses to go tell ghost stories in the woods. So yeah, it was really cool to us as kids, I guess.
That is pretty cool. And they start a fire and they throw this like magical dust on it that explodes.
Yeah, there's no mention of like kids just starting a fire in the woods.
The weekly gathering of the Midnight Society, where the kids all come to the campfire, they throw the dust on the flames. It's like a ritual for them that they follow every week, and it's like a ritual for the audience too, right? It's kind of a neat.
And then we also see occasionally there's a new member and they have to go through this initiation where they tell a scary story and then they're like deemed scary enough or not.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so you can.
Oh, I think the first episode had that, actually. They initiated one of the members.
That's right. And then throughout the years, as the kid actors would grow up or move on, they would, at the beginning of that season, say, this kid, he just moved away with his parents. So we need to initiate a new member now. And so. Yeah, it was neat.
And then they bring the kid to the fire with like a bag over their head, the new one. So like, I guess implying that they don't know where they are. So like if they're not accepted, then they will never be able to find the club.
It's secret. It's a secret. So I didn't have any memories of watching this as a kid. I don't think I did see it. I was probably just a touch too old to be its target demographic. So the show ran from 1990 to 2000. I think in those first few years, like maybe 90, 91, 92, I might have been interested in the show, like the right age for it, but I didn't have cable. So, you know, I was watching just antenna television, and in Canada, the show was available on YTV, which was a cable network. Now, when I went to my grandparents' house in the city, they had cable, and so I would greedily watch like Much Music and YTV and the Comedy Network and stuff. And all I really knew about Are You Afraid of the Dark was the books. I remember seeing some books, the cover of books, like in the library or in bookstores. So that was kind of my early memories of the show. I didn't watch it as a kid. What about you? Did you see it at all?
I actually didn't. I remember it being on, but I also didn't have YTV, so I didn't get to watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, protected here. And also, I was very, very scared of scary movies and scary stories. I think that I just would have avoided it because I would have been too scared.
So let me jump into some of the background on the show and the production history. So like Taz, you're saying, this is filmed in Canada, but the show was actually co-created by two Americans, DJ McHale and Ned Kandel. Now, McHale was more the creative side of this duo, and he was the showrunner and the director and the writer for quite a few episodes. So he's the guy we're really going to talk about as the force behind Are You Afraid of the Dark? So McHale is from Greenwich, Connecticut. He studied film production at NYU. Now, before Are You Afraid of the Dark, McHale wrote for other kids' shows, most notably Ghost Rider. Huh? That makes sense. Ghost Rider. I remember that show. That was a show that I did see on PBS.
I don't remember that show.
A haunted typewriter, a haunted book.
Yeah,
I might be getting that wrong. Taz, do you remember Ghost Rider at all?
I was Probably still in Norway. It's just a coincidence that they broadcasted Are You Afraid of the Dark? So,
yeah. So it was, as I said, a co-production between Nickelodeon and then a Canadian company called Cinar Films. They were based in Montreal. So the show was largely filmed in a studio in Montreal, as well as in and around Vancouver and a few other Canadian locations, but principally Montreal. So most of the actors and crew are Canadian on the show, including, importantly, the art director. His name is Rial Proulx. And I think art direction is really important in this show because there's always like creepy monsters and kind of interesting practical special effects that of the type you don't see anymore. Mm-hmm. Everything's digitally done now. And so,
that's right.
But there's a lot of just like costume and makeup and trickery with like wiring and whatnot in this show. So
and it looks great.
And it looks good. And mm-hmm. and so actually, Mikhail, in an interview from 2012, he actually comments on the Montreal production this way. He says, when we first started shooting from the show, the film industry in Montreal was doing very badly. So we were the only game in town. So we had the run of the place, all of this great stuff for a low budget show. So he knew that they were getting like a lot of bang for their buck with the Montreal production. So this was originally conceived as, this is kind of funny, as bedtime stories. I guess Mikhail said that him and his creator like were going to have an old man tell, read fairy tales. But then they sort of realized that that was going to be boring. And so they decided, okay, let's try like scary, scary stuff.
And no old man.
And no old, well, oh, no, there are old men.
Yeah, but not telling the story.
Yeah, but there are scary old men in the show. And I feel like that's such a big part of it being like actually creepy, like even today watching it. But I'll get to that in a minute. So actually, the Twilight Zone was a conscious influence on the show. So each tale that the kids tell around the fire is prefaced by them saying, submitted for the approval of the Midnight Society. And this is from The Twilight Zone, because on The Twilight Zone, Rod Serling, that was also like a classic kind of thriller anthology series. He would say to the audience at the beginning of each segment, submitted for your approval. Mm. He would say that, right? Now, sometimes the show really does feel like a middle-aged man wrote it, which is actually what is mostly happening in the show. And so it ran from 1959 to 1964, The Twilight Zone. So it's not like a super current reference for kids in the 90s. But okay, so the network wanted to do scary stories. They thought it was a good idea. It would be popular, but they were also afraid of criticism from the media and from parents and parents groups that the show would be like too scary. So Nickelodeon, the American network, told Mikhail, and this is Mikhail's quote, with your stories, see if you can base them on literary antecedents so that if we do get complaints, you can just say, hey, wait a minute, this is Edgar Allan Poe. This is Mary Shelley. This is classic stuff. Like, you can't complain
about
it.
That explains a lot.
Yeah, so as an example, like Naomi and I watched an episode. It was season 3, episode 1 from 1994. It's called The Tale of the Midnight Ride. And this is just a completely self-conscious updating of the tale of Sleepy Hollow. It takes place in Sleepy Hollow. So the classic American tale by Irving Washington.
And the characters from Sleepy Hollow, The Tale of Sleepy Hollow, are in it.
Yeah. Yeah,
like Ichabod Crane's ghost shows up and the Headless Horseman.
That's right.
Yeah.
So very, very subconsciously like a literary reference. So the show was like an early contribution to what was a wave of kids' horror and thriller shows in the 90s. So Beetlejuice was a show I remember in the late 80s. There was something called Eerie Indiana, 91, 92, a show I also remember. The Addams Family films, 91 and 92. And then, of course, probably the closest kind of relation to Are You Afraid of the Dark is Goosebumps, which was the book, a book series beginning in 1992. And then a television series from 95 to 98. And Goosebumps maybe is a future topic of Sweater Weather because it's very similar to Are You Afraid of the Dark, in which it had an American author but a Canadian production. Mm. And yeah, so this is kind of one of many kids scary series happening in the early 90s. I wonder why that is.
I'm so curious about how that would go over now, like if kids are even allowed to be scared now. You know what I mean?
Kids are allowed to be scared.
I know. I mean, I don't think that campfire scene with kids being out by themselves is
gonna fly that
Yeah,
well.
no way. I mean, those kids are being really bad. Either that or their parents are being extremely neglectful.
Yeah, they have
those kids are being
cool
super cool.
Parents.
That's what I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So DJ McHale, he wrote a lot of the episodes and directed a lot of the episodes. He sometimes wrote episodes under a pseudonym as well, the name Chloe Brown.
That's him?
Yeah, that's him.
Oh.
As from what I can understand on IMDb, okay. That was him. And why would he do that? It's because many of those episodes penned by Chloe Brown featured female protagonists. So I'm assuming he wanted to seem more credible, you know, yeah, as a writer, and maybe a little less creepy too. Because some of them, like, there are a lot of female protagonists in the show, and actually not as many female people, like female producers or writers or whatever.
That's right.
Yeah, not as many. Yeah. So, so a lot of the show is in a forest, and a lot of the tales that they tell are like involve characters running through the woods in the dark, right? So those forest scenes were almost always shot on a set. So the foliage was plucked and placed there temporarily, or it was plastic, and it looks pretty good. You can't really tell in the low light because it's normally dark, right? So because of that, the production had to shoot all of the forest scenes from all episodes of a given season in 1 week before the set rotted and dehydrated.
Oh my God.
So McHale said, isn't that funny? So yeah, because every episode has them in a forest.
Yeah.
So. McHale says, quote, "We only wanted to build that forest once, and by the end of 7 days, that forest was pretty dry and gamey."
Gamey.
This is worse.
Gross. Yeah, it's hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. Now, a lot of Canadian actors were featured on the show because every week they needed a whole bunch of new actors for the tale of the week. So Alicia Cuthbert from 24 and Happy Endings. She was a regular on Are You Afraid of the Dark in later seasons. Her name was Megan. Jacob Tierney, he's the co-creator, co-writer, and director of Letterkenny, which is like a future topic of Sweater Weather, a very funny sitcom. He was a member of the Midnight Society in the first season. His name was Eric. And then several other actors and actresses, Mia Kirshner, Hayden Christensen, Jay Baruchel, and Ryan Gosling, they all appeared on the show in guest spots. Yeah. Do you recall we saw an episode with Mia Kirshner?
Oh, yeah. I recall it. All right.
Yeah, that's right.
That was an amazing episode.
That's crazy that Ryan Gosling was in it. Like, I did not expect that.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. A young Ryan Gosling was on it. The show had 5 seasons originally, wrapping in 1995, but then the show was very popular in syndication in places such as Norway. So the Canadian producers, they went back to DJ McHale and said, hey, let's make some more episodes. People love the show and it's selling well abroad. So let's do that. And so they made 2 more seasons from 98 to 2000. They made a total of 7 seasons and 91 episodes. So the show won Gemini Awards for Canadian Film and Television. It won Hugo Awards for Science Fiction and Fantasy in the kids and young adult programming categories. There was a PC game based on the show, a board game, audiobooks, as well as the books, the normal books I mentioned earlier. So there was a lot of Are You Afraid of the Dark stuff out there. Now, after finishing the show, McHale became the author of young adult books, most notably the best-selling Pendragon series.
Oh,
I've heard of that.
Yeah.
I haven't read it. He wrote those between 2002 and 2009, and I have a feeling he made more money on those books than he ever did on the show.
Really?
That's what I am assuming.
You mean money on books? Mind blowing.
If you write a series like that, maybe you make some money. He's done other TV writing and producing as well. In 2019, Paramount Studios rebooted Are You Afraid of the Dark? And they've made 3 new seasons so far for a new generation.
So how does that work? Are the kids out by themselves at night or like...
Why are you asking questions like
that? Okay, you don't.
I actually didn't watch it.
Okay.
I haven't watched the new one.
All right.
So that'll be scrubbed from the record probably. But it's a different... For the new show, it's a different creative team. It's a guy named Ben David Grabinski. He's the main writer and showrunner. And McHale and the other original co-creator, they're listed as producers, but I don't believe they're involved and intimately in the production of this show.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I think. It's kind of part of a wave of, you know, nostalgic remakes, revisitations. And I do wonder, like, who's that for, right? When you're bringing back Are You Afraid of the Dark as a brand, let's say, who is that for? Who remembers that? Parents remember that.
Yeah.
So what are you doing? Are you appealing to the parents? It's like, oh, hey, kids, watch the show. I remember it being good. Is that what's happening?
I mean, I know you can't answer this, so you're probably going to have to edit this out. But it is interesting because we were just asking, could this show be made now? And I feel like a lot of my friends who are parents would not let their kids watch a scary show because they'd be afraid that the kids would be too scared.
Not a 90s version. Not the show that we watched for this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I wonder how it's different, you know? And also, like Taz said, like the bad influence potentially of the kids going out by themselves at night and like lighting
things on fire
in the middle of the night in a forest. Yeah.
Apparently that powder that they pull from the bag and throw on the fire, it was like a mixture involving instant coffee. Apparently. that's how it would work. Yeah.
Didn't know instant coffee was so flammable.
Yeah, you don't really want your kid like
seems dangerous.
Yeah. You don't want your kid getting any ideas like going out with a sack of like potentially flammable powder.
There's a lot of
fire.
This show is potentially a lot of bad influence on kids.
I mean, like even in the episodes, the kids are like sneaking out and daring each other to kind of do dangerous things, right? So.
Oh, totally. Playing hide and seek in the graveyard at night.
Yeah, this is bad behavior.
Yeah.
Taz,
risky.
Taz, did you want to talk about an episode in particular?
Yeah, I guess I could talk about Tale of Laughing in the Dark, which was, I think, episode 3 from season 1.
1992.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably when I watched it. Like, when I watched it, I watched season 1, maybe season 2. I'm not entirely sure, but
So this episode stands out
to you. Yeah, it's very nostalgic, I guess. So, so I was doing a bit of research for this episode, and I found a review from IMDb. I thought it was kind of funny, so I'll read that first. So they call the synopsis is basically a clever game of hide and go seek. This episode seemed to go for the all out scare. It was a really good episode, but its problem was predictability. I could see the entire episode's plot at about 5 minutes into it. But this episode was well directed. It was really fresh and looked almost movie quality. The plot for this one is that a smart aleck kid steals the clown's nose from a funhouse and the clown comes back to get it. Another plus for the episode is the really creepy music. It was an excellent start to the series and I recommend you watch this. Guest starring Aaron Taggart as Zeebo, who later plays Dr. Vink. So
that's right.
Oh, Dr. Vink.
Dr. Vink, as he says. And Aaron Taggart, he just chews the scenery in every episode he appears in. He's just so big. It's so entertaining.
Yeah.
Makes up for the bad child acting in many cases.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think Dr. Vink was also in the first episode, which was like the tale of the taxi cab or something like that. And I was like,
that's right.
Yeah. I don't want to like go off on a tangent, but I just remember when I first saw the character of Dr. Vink, he really reminded me like of Hagrid from Harry Potter. Like, steal this? anyways.
That's right. Yeah. Dr. Vink is like, he is an interesting amalgam character, kind of part wizard, part mad scientist, part just old creepy guy. And he appears, he's a reoccurring character in many episodes throughout the series. Yeah. Very much Hagrid energy, but this is
but more like crazy, creepy.
Harry Potter.
But I was like, why is this reminding me of Harry Potter for some reason? But anyways.
Absolutely, yeah.
Back to the episode of Laughing in the Dark. So like the review mentioned, this episode centers on a boy named Josh who's hanging out with his supposedly best friend Ouija and his little sister at what's known as the Playland Amusement Park. And as is very typical of a lot of the Are You Afraid of the Dark episodes, Josh is a bit of a bully and Ouija is the timid, cautious one. So I've noticed this dynamic in a lot of the episodes.
It's so true. The bully kid or the bully older brother is an archetype that reappears over and over again.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, so the group, they arrive at the Laughing in the Dark spook house, which is supposedly haunted by a clown ghost named Zeebo.
I love Zeebo. I love the choice of name for Zeebo.
Yeah, it's a good name for sure. So Josh, being the bully, taunts them to go inside, but Ouija and his sister aren't having any of it. So after accusing them of being chickens, he decides that he's going to go on the ride by himself. But on his way to the spook house, he encounters the circus carny that's running the place. And he's pretty creepy. He's all like, if you pick the right door, then you'll go free. But if you pick the wrong door, then there he'll be. So at the last minute, Josh changes his mind.
Speaks and rhymes.
Yeah.
He speaks in rhyme. Yeah. He's really creepy. This is Aaron Taggart. This is Aaron Taggart.
Oh, that's him too?
That's him as well. Okay. I believe it is.
So he's Zeebo.
He's Zeebo as well.
Okay.
He plays, yeah.
Yeah.
The actor plays Zeebo. It's not obvious because Zeebo is very heavily made up when we see him. But
that carny seemed like he could also be a ghost or something.
Right. Just then a quick aside about the crazy old men characters who pop up all over the place. They're like legitimately scary. Like that is part of the show that is, I think, unacceptable to kids today. Probably like it would be like, oh, this guy actually has the air of like a real life criminal who would kidnap or murder children. And so, like, it really does feel like that. So you're like,
entertaining, just like
it's just scary. Yeah. Like it's just scary. Like, wow, this is a psychopath that they put on. Like it just doesn't have. I think it's partly also the production quality of the show, where there isn't any digital anything. It's just guys in makeup. So when they zoom in on Aaron Taggart's face and he's just making like an evil grimace and laughing, you're like, you're just seeing a guy. Acting crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this like grown man who's for some reason tormenting children.
I know. when we watched this, we were like, that kid is being lured by a pedophile into a mansion. Like, don't go. Like, I can't. And you're just imagining being a kid who's like, hey, okay, this sounds like a pretty good, a pretty fun adventure to go in this house. We're like, no, don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Times have changed.
Anyway, so please continue. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So in the next scene, Ouija and his little sister give us the backstory to Zeebo. So according to them, in 1924, a circus came to town and set up near the Playland Amusement Park.
Do you remember, Taz, do you remember how they knew this? Like, how did these kids know this?
They somehow found these old newspaper articles. I don't know.
Right. They were like, look at this.
I somehow magically have this old newspaper article, I guess. They must have gone to the library and gotten a copy of the microfiche.
You know, like 12-year-olds. You know, 12-year-olds just doing, some Saturday morning archival research.
Basically, I was like, okay, they're just sitting there kind of giving us the exposition in the scene of what's happening. But basically one of the clowns, basically Zeebo, who was a smoker, stole all this money from the circus's payroll. They mentioned it was $4,000, and the kids were like, whoa, that's a lot.
Oh, my God. 2024.
I could buy a bike with that.
Anyways, the police ended up chasing Zeebo, and he hid inside the Laughing in the Dark original ride. And he almost got away with the crime, but he ended up dropping his cigar and burning the place down along with him in it. So now the legend has it that the ghost of Zeebo remains trapped inside the rebuilt version of the original Funhouse.
Okay, so we know two things about Zeebo. One, he's an evil clown. Number two, he smokes too much.
Yeah, well, so that's only evil clowns.
But cigars specifically. He has expensive taste.
Kind of Krusty the Clownish in that way.
He is Krusty the Clownish, isn't he? Yeah, this is running at the same time as early Simpsons.
I mean, a little bit.
Oh, there's a Krusty the Clown vibe, but the cigar especially. Yeah. I mean, I think that's an old clown archetype.
Oh, okay.
I'm imagining. I mean, I'm assuming that's where Krusty gets it from too, but.
Okay. Yeah, I thought that it was a joke because it was like juxtaposition of being like a clown and smoking a cigar.
Yeah, I don't know. It is funny. It is funny. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It works.
Maybe it is an archetype.
It might be. I don't know. I mean, it's The Simpsons is like that, where so much of what The Simpsons does is like reference to some like movie from the 60s. Like, you know, because the show writers know, and everybody else just thinks it's funny and they like it and they don't know what the reference is. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the basis for Krusty the Clown really is. It probably is somebody. It's probably a real clown. Anyway, so okay, so what happens now? So Josh is like being a jerk.
Yeah, so basically he's kind of like, whatever, it's not real, I don't buy it. So his friend Ouija kind of dares him to go into the funhouse to prove that he's not scared. And so they return back to the Playland amusement park, I think, that night. And they make a bet that if Josh is able to retrieve the nose off the dummy Zeebo, then Ouija will have to wear the nose to school for a week. So unfortunately for Ouija, Josh does manage to get the nose. And after he takes it, he's like, oh, this is no big deal. It's all just like an urban legend or whatever. But then, some weird things start to happen, right? So, for example, there's the smell of lingering cigar smoke that Josh can't seem to place. Mm. But the audience gets...
What could that be from?
Yeah, I know.
You can't figure it out.
I know.
Anyway, I guess we'll just go to the next scene.
Yeah, I really like the shot where like the cigar smoke is like drifting out from the side of the building. It's so creepy.
It's very creepy. They've like, there's like Zeebo's hiding around the corner, but we don't see him. It's great.
I actually thought this episode hiding
the monster.
Yeah, it was kind of scary actually.
And of course, Josh, instead of running away, like goes towards the cigar smoke cloud, and you're like, no.
classic horror movie. Horror movie mistake.
So later that night, Josh finds himself home alone, and he's about to eat an entire bowl of chocolate pudding when he hears a noise from the closet that scares him enough to drop it, right?
So the pudding bowl splashes all over the floor.
Yes, yes.
And it is a massive bowl of pudding.
It really was. I was like, whoa.
Oh, this is like pudding for like a family of 16.
Yeah, it's huge.
So at this point, all sorts of stuff starts happening. He hears the noise in the closet. He opens it up. There's nothing in there. Then there's a phone call from Ouija. And then after hanging up, though, he gets another call. And this time it's from a stranger with a scratchy voice, you know, telling him to give it back, referring to the nose.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So
the voice sounds familiar. It sounds like a guy I've heard before. It's like a maybe a possessed clown.
Like someone who called you on the phone once.
Yeah,
no, I just
had a similar.
Oh, but kidding. You don't get those phone calls. Uh-oh. I just thought it was a telemarketer. Some weird robocall, but anyway, it might be an evil clown.
So after that phone call, he's like super freaking out. And I remember this is the point kind of in the episode where all the creepy stuff starts to happen. And he notices that the microwave is like smoking, which is our first indication that like shit's about to go down, right? So he opens the microwave and it's full of cigar smoke. And then the pot of spaghetti that he was heating up is like when he opens the lid is full of burnt cigars. And then he sees the letter Z in the, in like a footprint with the letter Z on it in the pudding that he spilled previously.
So Zeeble, right. So, well, okay, hold on. Let's just pause for a second here. So what we're led to believe is that Zeebo has proprietary sneakers that he wears with a big Z in the bottom that he can step in. What this moment too, this is really like, it is classic horror, like made for kids, because there's gross out stuff, but at the kid level, right? So it's like, ew, here's this container of like smoking, moldering cigars. Like, isn't that gross? And they make it look really gross. And they have a big close up of the cigars in the container. And then it's the same with the pudding. It's like a brown mess on the ground. It's like really, it's like kid gross out.
Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah, totally. Yeah, like as an adult, you're just like, that's a big waste of cigars. Like, I would just smoke one if like, it was me.
Yeah, those Cubans?
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, Josh.
Not to mention the mess.
Oh my God! All of the Swiffer pads that's gonna take to clean up. Anyway,
all that pudding. Anyways, Josh is so freaked out that he calls Ouija back to confirm that Ouija was the one who pranked him. Well, while they're on the phone, however, the call's interrupted by that same strange voice from before, and Josh is like, you know, quit messing around with me. He says he thinks it's Ouija's sister, but then Ouija reminds him that they only have one phone. So the interruption must be on Josh's side, meaning Zeebo's ghost is now fully and properly inside Josh's house.
Yeah, well, if the container of smoking cigars wasn't a clue,
and then
I guess the voice in the house and the phone is
so panicked. Yeah. He understandably super panicked. He locks his bedroom door, and I really like the scene that follows. It's like the door handles rattling, and then Zeebo the clown blows a balloon under the door. And somehow the balloon gets through under the door and like fully like inflates and it says give it back on it. So
it's a great visual moment, actually. Very creepy. Yeah. I never thought of that before. It was so good.
Yeah, it's also a little surreal because like how the heck is this balloon inflating from under the door? Seems odd.
Yeah.
Anyways, he manages...
Ghosts can do stuff like that.
Only the supernatural. The laws of physics do not apply. he manages to escape through his bedroom window and he returns, obviously, back to the Playland amusement park with Zeebo's nose and a gigantic box of cigars as a peace offering.
Where did he get those? He was selling like 100 cigars to like a 12-year-old.
Yeah, he must have stolen them from like his grandpa or something.
Or maybe he like, you know, you could do in the 80s and 90s is like take a note from your parents to the store.
Still, that's expensive.
Please, dear cigar vendor, please sell my child 100 cigars. Signed Zeebo.
Uncle Zeebo.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Like it wouldn't even have to be your parents. It could be your uncle who signed these notes that you brought to the corner store to buy cigarettes. But anyway, yeah.
So the episode basically ends with the circus carny smoking one of the cigars, implying that he's actually been Zeebo's ghost the whole time. So you were right, Naomi.
So it's like a real, okay, that's even scarier. Like, okay, so when, because if you're like, okay, so the circus carny, like barks carnival barker guy, if the show tells, oh, that's actually Zeebo. So I mean, that guy was like in this kid's house, like creeping him out, calling him, like the physical guy was harassing a child.
No, that guy is the ghost.
I know, but what? Oh, but is the well? Okay, never mind. Okay, never mind. You know what? This children's show has boggled me. Like boggled my mind, and I'm like really, really upset.
It's okay, he's not here.
But that's smoke. I think that's just from all the Montreal smokers. Actually,
smoke that I've seen. That cloud of smoke.
That cloud of smoke wafting in off of the terrace outside. It must be anyway. So wow, that's a great episode.
So Taz, you have something to tell us about it.
So basically what drew me to this episode was this idea of the fear of clowns. Clowns aren't really a very common thing in either Bengali or Norwegian culture. So I hadn't actually really encountered scary clowns until kind of moving to Canada or North America more so. And so I was curious why it's considered scary. So looking it up, I found out that the fear of clowns is actually a real psychological disorder, and it's known as coulrophobia. And Britannica.com had a really hilarious article on the condition. And if can I read some to you guys?
Please.
Okay, so coulrophobia is no laughing matter. This irrational fear of clowns can cause panic and nausea. Although it's a rare phobia, many people find clowns creepy, if not downright scary. Why? The answer lies partly in the prevalence of evil clowns in popular culture. Think Pennywise in Stephen King's It. However, according to researchers, there are actual psychological reasons why we fear clowns. To begin with, a clown's makeup can be unsettling. It hides not only the person's identity, but also that person's feelings. Worse, the makeup can result in mixed signals if, for example, the clown has a painted-on smile but is frowning. Then there's the uncanny nature of the makeup itself. The oversized lips and eyebrows distort the face so that the brain perceives it as human but slightly off. That oddness is heightened by the clown's bizarre costume. In addition, clowns are highly unpredictable as well as mischievous, which puts people on edge. Are they going to squirt water at you or give you a flower?
They
might humiliate you, so that's like a common phobia. It's like that you're going to be embarrassed in front of people, right? And clowns are apt to do that. I was thinking about the makeup too. It is scary because like the facial expression belies what's really underneath. That is scary. Mm-hmm. And then that uncanny valley thing that it's like human but not. It makes sense that people are afraid of clowns.
Yeah. Well, that panic and nausea I feel every time I see a clown. Now I know what it's called.
It's no laughing matter. It's the first thing the article said.
Yeah.
Well, you gotta laugh. You gotta laugh at these things. Thank you for that. Here's the thing about Are You Afraid of the Dark? All these tales kind of like, I guess, fairy tales and other kind of classic kids stories, they have a moral, right? There's a moral of the story. And so the moral of this story is, I guess, don't be like Josh, who's a bully and a braggart, and he pushes things too far, right?
I guess like, so, yeah.
Because there's a moment when he's in what they call the spook house.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember like, why isn't it called the haunted house anyway? Anyway, when he's in the spook house, and there's a moment when he can leave, right? He's successfully navigated the spook house and he could leave, but no. He turns back because he thinks, aha, I will grab that nose and I will show my friends up and I'll win this bet and I'll humiliate my best friend, which is like a really mean
thing.
Every
kid's dream.
I'm humiliating my best friend by making him wear this nose to school. Every kid's dream. Right? And but so he so that's a moment when he could have like been a good like humble and a good friend and forgotten about the dumb bet, but instead he wants to win and show. So but then I guess the forces of cosmic evil really, really put Josh in his place.
Although it's also kind of like it's sort of evil, but like there's the clown isn't really that bad. Like all it wants is its nose back. It doesn't really want to do any harm to anybody.
I don't know.
No, just to scare people.
Having someone come to your house and not even ring the doorbell.
He's lost a body part, like his iconic body part. What would you do?
It's true. It's just he's. It's a very nose-based identity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like being a clown.
Yeah.
He's almost like not a clown without his nose.
Absolutely. And like really he's the one who's been wronged. His nose has been stolen.
Yeah, and that's the case with this episode and so many of the episodes of Are You Afraid of the Dark, is that the evil, like the haunting, the evil force, the dark forces are in the end, of course, actually the forces of good.
Or at least benign.
Or well, they're there to teach people a lesson, right? Like they restore they teach a kid to be like to not be a bully.
Mm. Right.
Or they maybe we'll talk about some other episodes too, but like it's kind of funny. There's something kind of like, I guess, semi-religious about this kind of world where like creepy cosmic supernatural forces actually put the world in order, and so that morality prevails. That is sort of what I one of the ways I read this show. So yeah, the next maybe we'll quickly talk about.
The Tale of the Hungry Hounds.
It's season one, episode, is it five? Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
1992.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
So this one actually is starring Mia Kirshner, who became a bit of a star, at least for a while afterwards. She was in a couple of Adam McGoyan movies, and actually starred in Exotica, one of his films.
Future topic of Sweater Weather.
Yeah, well, maybe not that movie, but Adam McGoyan anyway. Mm-hmm. And I remember she was in the film Love and Human Remains, which was based on a Brad Fraser play. And in this episode, she plays so this episode is very odd because the plot just kind of meanders in this strange way. So I hope I can even like, get it right. But basically, these two cousins, Mia Kirshner is the main cousin, and her kind of, it seems like slightly older, cooler cousin is visiting.
From the city. Mia Kirshner is like a country
right,
cousin.
Right, so it's country cousin and city cousin. And they're hanging out in the country cousin's attic, and they discover a giant chest that belonged to an aunt who looked exactly like the cousin, played by Mia Kirshner, coincidentally, but also very... it means that Mia Kirshner can play the aunt as well when the time comes.
Right, when we, yes.
But they are absolutely identical. And this chest is clearly haunted and should not be opened. But the cool cousin and the other cousin, the country cousin who wants to impress the cool cousin, bust the chest open. And then, all of a sudden, Mia Kirshner, who until then has been a kind of country girl with a ponytail and like a plaid shirt, becomes this glamorous olden days equestrian.
She's she suddenly becomes a high society
horseback
riding.
The aunt was killed in a horse riding accident.
Yeah. Her voice like so she completely this, changes like, too at that point, like you're like what.
And she looks like 15 years older. Like she becomes this kind of like beautiful woman who's going to be riding this horse.
And you can tell from this episode, she's a much better actress than
any of the others.
Than your average kid actor
like
on the show.
She's really acting.
She's really acting. And she's also like quite a bit. She's pretty old too. Like she's got to be 17, 16,
17. Although they make her look really young when she's the country cousin. But then when she's the glamorous equestrian from years past, she looks a lot older. So then she's off through a portal. So a portal opens in the attic.
You know how it happens. Like, there's a portal now?
And the country cousin, who is now the aunt, goes through the portal followed by the cool makeup wearing city cousin who somehow has not figured out what's going on, like, at all. She's just like, what, where are you going?
Where are you going? Just walk through a portal together.
Why do you look like this? I don't understand. Why are you on a horse? Like, none of this adds up. I can't put it together. Why are we back in, like, olden times? I don't get it. And then what happens? I'm like,
well, they get to the family graveyard, they're in front of this grave, and it turns out to be Aunt Dora's grave, right? So, and then at this point, you know, she's fully possessed by Aunt Dora's ghost, and so she goes. This is where she goes off into this weird monologue about Mon Petit Rouge, which is this fox that she had.
Right.
She's like holding a bone in her hand and mumbling like Mon Petit Rouge, and the cousin.
It's like gets like French New Wave kind of for a few minutes here.
Yeah, and then so she explains like the backstory of her riding accident at that point in the graveyard, and basically the fox was kept inside this cage for this hunt, and she felt sorry for it, let the fox out. And then the fox somehow escaped into the woods like it's supposed to, but she was like, oh no, the hunters are waiting for him there. I better go save him. So she gets on her horse, chases after Mont Petit Rouge, and that's where she has the riding accident. But then the story gets even more bizarre, because right after...
So what we're learning is that... So what's happening is that the family is haunted by the tragedy of Aunt Dora's death by horse.
Yes.
And so what's happening now is that we've gone through a portal to replay this tragic accident with Mia Kirshner in the role of Aunt Dora.
But Aunt Dora, meanwhile, the ghost is also haunted by the memory of what happened to the fox.
Yeah, because this is where everything went, like, I was like, what the hell's happening now? Because
There's like too much going on in this
episode. Yeah, I felt like it was like three or four ghost stories in one episode. And then all of a sudden, this like creepy old man shows up. Like you said, there is a lot of creepy old men in the Are You Afraid of the Dark? And he's all just like talking to her like, when are you going to finish your chores? And like just... Yeah, and then it turns out he's a ghost too. There's a ghost left, right, and center in this episode. And he basically accuses Aunt Dora of forgetting to feed the hounds. I don't know why she was responsible for this, or why no one even bothered to check on the hounds.
Right.
I'm like, how long were the hounds in there? but anyways, he said that, you know, like the hounds almost starved to death. And by the time he got to them, they were so hungry that they attacked him, or like attempted to attack him.
They killed him.
Yeah, but no, he died of a heart attack. It wasn't the hounds that...
Oh, okay. we don't really care about the farmhand as a ghost that much. Like, he's there clearly just to facilitate Dora's haunting.
Aunt Dora is haunted by the fox, and the farmhand is haunted by the hounds, but they're both ghosts. And like Adora's death is like haunting the family, the chest of the family.
This is a confused episode, but it is very
Okay, so then what happens?
So basically, you know, he starts screaming at the girls. They run and hide in the barn, and they get locked in there. And I think the person telling the story is like, oh yeah, it's implied that either Giles, the farmhand or whatever, locked them in there. And at this point, Dora now becomes super obsessed with feeding the hounds. And I guess the city cousin, the city cousin is getting like the vibes that she's the one going to get fed to the hounds. But then it turns out there's like a bag of kibble, and all you have to do is go get the bag of kibble.
So they let
there's some good like cinematography in this episode. When the door bursts open and all the hounds come running out. And which cousin is it? Is it Dora? It is Dora. It's Mia Kirshner. She like is it's slow motion and it's like there's like a it's kind of smoky and there's like this really eerie light and she like runs to escape the hounds by climbing up on top of some feed sacks, you know, piled in the corner. And the hounds are like lunging at her and they're real dogs and it's filmed like really provocatively. And I'm like, ooh, I was scared watching that. I was like, oh no, it's like a childhood. It really was like a kind of a childhood memory of like, I actually have a childhood memory of being afraid of dogs.
Yeah.
And so I was like, ooh, that does actually really hit as like a childhood fear.
Oh yeah.
The way it was filmed.
But the hounds are also ghosts,
yes,
right?
Yes. They are also ghosts.
The hounds are ghosts.
So, okay.
Everyone's a ghost through the portal. When you go through the portal, it's
everyone's
all
ghosts. Everyone's a ghost.
Top to bottom.
Except for the city cousin who's all like, what the hell? But at this point, she's like figured it out. She's like, oh, she's possessed by our aunt's ghost.
Right. So she's not exactly a ghost. She's possessed. So like if she was eaten by the dogs, like the country cousin would be in. Like she'd be in
yeah. Like what's at stake is like oh
she's in the body. Of
we don't want you know the city the country cousin to get eaten by or whatever to be trapped in the spirit realm or something.
Right.
Like, there's like something at stake there. Like you have to like successfully navigate this historical haunting.
Right. Fix it.
Fix it.
Yeah.
So that we can come back to the real.
And then the ghost of Mont Petit Rouge shows up.
This is like so snobby.
Yeah, yeah.
And basically saves the day, like it distracts the hounds away from the city cousin and they run off into wherever. And the final kind of scene is of Aunt Dora in her full riding gear on top of her horse. And then she rides off into the misty night.
yeah. And then... So the haunting has been successfully solved, essentially.
Right.
So we're back in the house, and it's the next day, the next morning, I guess.
I'm not clear on what it is.
Timelines are not clear.
Timelines are not clear.
The cousins are back in the attic.
They're back in the
attic.
So
obviously it wasn't, like Dora didn't ride away in the body of the cousin.
No.
The cousin is
and it was
back.
Filmed well because the Dora on the horse is shot from a distance so we can't really see her in detail. So we don't see that it's Mia Kirshner.
Yeah.
It could be anybody on the horse.
Right.
Essentially. And it's like supposed to be the ghost of Aunt Dora.
Yeah.
So the next day, Mia Kirshner, a country cousin, doesn't remember anything.
No.
Right.
Meanwhile, the city cousin is like, oh, don't you remember when you were outside the dogs?
Yeah.
And she's like, what are you talking about? And then Mia Kirshner says, well, anyway, I have to go downstairs and feed the dogs.
Mm.
And she's like, what? Well, then the city cousin is like, what? Well, you said feed the dogs.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't have dogs. What dogs? And she says, no, I said feed the dog. And so this neat. Oh, that was really neat.
Yeah.
Like a little hint that
the possession that
was
left
real,
in effect.
Left in effect. And if that wasn't enough, I do believe that isn't it city cousin who goes into her pockets and pulls out like kibble?
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
All right, just to really hammer the point home.
It really happened.
It really happened.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, there's so many different layers of like hauntings and people that were wronged and stuff.
Yeah, very.
But now maybe all the ghosts can rest in peace. Dora, the farmhand, the hounds,
and Mont Petit,
and Petit Rouge.
Yeah.
Mont Petit Rouge.
Mont Petit Rouge. Mont Petit Rouge saved the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Thanks for that. That's a wonderful episode. Do you have other thoughts on that episode, Tess?
I actually have a really funny review that I came across for this episode.
Oh yeah.
For the horse girl within us all. I don't know about you, but there is a horse girl within me that is dying to be let free. And that same part of me also might have forgotten to feed some hounds. Leave it to Kirsten to tell us a story about a horse girl that ends up being more about dogs. It's like a haunted saddle club episode, but honestly, it works really well.
Very atmospheric, slightly interdimensional, pretty spooky. It packs a whole lot in under 30 minutes. I think Kirsten's stories are going to be fun because she seems kind of materialistic, but also deeper than one might expect because of this. So I imagine you can expect her stories to have a sort of materialistic, fairly girly kind of feel. I'm thinking a tween V.C. Andrews with a paranormal twist. So I will say I loved this episode.
That's amazing. So, like, the reviewer actually sees the different kids in the Midnight Club as having their own style for
Yeah,
storytelling.
exactly.
Yeah.
Fans of the show will say that about certain stories seem to be tailored to the personalities of the tellers, and I think sometimes that's more the case than not.
So, as a fan, Taz, did you notice the different kids around the fire having different story styles?
Yeah, I think so. And also, like, yeah, the kids also have like different personalities. There also seems to be like kind of the bullying and taunting going on around the campfire as well. Yeah, I
Absolutely, yeah.
especially noticed that in the episode with the clown. I think Kirsten was the one who was really afraid of the clown, so everyone kept, not everyone, but two kids in particular kept trying to scare her or be like taunting
That's
her.
right. That's
Yeah.
right. And at one point, there was like a crush that one of the Midnight Kids had on the other.
Oh, yeah, that's
And
true.
like I think they went on a date. And then there's also like a little kid, like a younger kid who joins and like gets bullied by one of the older kids, but he's also kind of a brat. So yeah, there's like little storylines going on.
There's a little,
Yeah,
yeah, they
yeah.
try to interweave it a little bit often. Like
Yeah.
maybe there's a character in the tale told that works too much. And then they cut to at the end of the episode when we're in back in the frame narrative with the kids on the campfire. The teller's like, oh, maybe I should actually go on that date with whatever his
Yeah,
name is.
right.
Because, I thought homework can wait for another time
Yeah,
or
yeah,
something
yeah.
like
So
that.
they learn lessons for their own lives from the stories.
That's right. That's
Yeah.
right. So we should, this is great. We should probably wrap up now.
All
So
right.
just like as final thoughts on Are You Afraid of the Dark? I will start by saying I just want to repeat again how much I like the practical effects in this series. So there was one episode in particular. It stars actually guest stars Bobcat Goldthwait, the comedian and really kind of weird actor. It's called The Tale of the Final Wish from 1993. And he plays the Sandman again in a dream realm. And like he's really scary. They film him like a psychopath. And you're like,
Yeah.
oh my gosh, it's really scary. But then the practical effects in that episode are really good. So there are. In the dreamland, there are sleepers suspended, it seems it must be by wiring. We don't see how it's done. They just seem to be floating there. And they're real bodies, real people. It's all smoky and weirdly lit. And
Right.
it's very well done. It looks very scary. And you're like, that's all a practical effect. And it's like, there's no green screen happening here, I don't think. So I just want to shout out the practical effects of
Nice.
Real Pru. I think that's a great, the show would not be like at all as interesting. I mean, the writing is sometimes pretty good, but like without the practical effects, this show is not that good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Well, I just want to say that I think it's so neat how neat. I think it's so interesting how kids in the 90s were like allowed to be scared and have this experience of like actually watching something that's supposed to be scary, but that's supposed to be for children as well. And so the protagonists are always kids. The scares are do have like a child-centric quality to them, like the Zed is in pudding, not something more perhaps grotesque that it would be. But and also that although like there is like truly creepy stuff in these stories, the stories always resolve in a way where like yeah, the ghost is either like not that bad, or the ghost is actually benevolent sometimes, or the ghost just needs help. And the kid is like happy to give it to them because like ghosts are people too or whatever. And like the kind of like the realm of the supernatural is like there's chaotic stuff that happens, but ultimately the chaos is resolvable, and like that's what everyone wants, including the ghosts. It's not like there's an underlying chaoticness to life in this other realm. Do you know what I mean?
No, actually, as I, like I've said before, like it actually is solving problems.
Yeah, yeah,
this is
yeah.
actually a force for good, ultimately, even yeah. if it challenges the kids in a scary way.
Yeah, and there's always room for like compassion, empathy, and like a meeting of the minds, even if it's between people and ghosts.
you can negotiate with ghosts.
What do you think, Tess?
I like that quality about it too. I really liked how the show is kind of now, when looking back on it, it's kind of a time capsule of how young people used to hang out in a time before phones and internet. Mm-hmm. It's just great to see kids doing things that require both like a sense of danger and imagination. And I'm pretty glad that mm-hmm. I was able to have a similar sort of childhood where being outdoors was always infinitely better than being in front of a screen, except of course on Saturday nights when Are You Afraid of the Dark was on.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And I love how actually the kids are telling each other stories and they're holding each other's storytelling technique to like a certain standard, and like that's the initiation into this club of like cool rebels is being able to tell a good story, you know. I mean, that's like, it's actually pretty
awesome. It is.
It's kind of like a kid. I was thinking of like the horror thriller tendency of the 90s for kids. It's kind of like a version. It is a weird version of alternative culture in a way. Like for kids, though. It's like, oh, it's a little dark. It's a little edgy. But, but for kids. So, so Taz, thanks for talking about Are You Afraid of the Dark with us. You've recently published a book, a poetry collection called Orchid Astronomy. Could you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. So An Orchid Astronomy is a book of experimental poetry that follows the story of Sophie as she grapples with the loss of her mother and the loss of the natural world as she knows it. Since the story is revealed through a decontextualized narrative, I'd like to provide a little bit of context by taking a moment to talk about some of the characters you'll encounter in the book, other than Sophie and her mom, of course. The first character is the character of the Sarvis, or the reindeer constellation. That's on the cover of the book. There's the reindeer.
It's a beautiful cover.
Yes, I really love the cover. So the Sarvis is taken from Sami astronomy or Sami mythology, the Sami being the indigenous people of Norway's Arctic region, which is where the book is set. So the story of the Sarvis is that every night he's engaged in what's known as the celestial hunt, where he's chased across the night sky by three hunters known as the Galabartnet brothers, who are represented by the three stars found in Orion's belt. So there's this idea that if the Sarvis was to fall or vanish from the night sky, then the other stars and celestial bodies will soon follow a similar fate. So the disappearance of the Sarvis is considered a bad omen, as it marks the beginning of the end. So, of course, in my book, the Sarvis has indeed fallen from the night sky, and he's washed up onto the shores of Sophie's village. The other major character is the character of the mother's ex-lover, and he's referenced in the text using the second person pronoun you. So I hope this bit of background is helpful for anyone interested in reading the book.
Thank you, Taz. It's a beautiful book. I loved reading it.
Thank you so much.
And it's about the night. Yeah. It's about the nighttime sky.
Yes, it is. It's about night. Yes.
Right. Well, thank you again, Taz.
Well, thank you so much for having me on.
And thank you, everybody watching and listening. And we'll see you next time.